re-up that request. I also feel like I've noticed in the last several months with Hunter teaching class, I feel like the first things I need to do is to set the record straight. Because I feel like sometimes he leaves out some important context. So this morning, if you were in class, you heard him say that if I was going to make a choice between throwing him off a cliff and my mom off a cliff, I would choose throwing Lana off the cliff. That's what y'all heard this morning. So the context behind that, which I do feel like there's some value in, the question that was posed to me was if Lana or one of my boys was falling off a cliff, not me throwing them off a cliff, but if they were both falling off a cliff and I could only save one, who would I save? Does that sound different than the way it got presented in class? I mean, I can imagine y'all kind of thinking, Kevin's just there pitching his family off the cliff, you know, which sometimes I will say, if I was throwing someone off a cliff, it would have been Hunter. Because I knew he'd land on his feet. Somehow he would survive. So in my defense as well, when Lana was posed with the exact same question, she'd have let me go over. Just, I want to make sure everybody's on the same page this morning. So if you're in class, I just really felt like I needed to set the record straight because y'all are going to start worrying as you walk around me, thinking I might just start chunking people off the cliff. This morning, we're still in the Sermon on the Mount. We're going to be here a while. We've spent over a month talking about the Beatitudes. And as we concluded that last week, the title of this next section is Salt and Light. And interestingly enough, and I think it's worth noting, that sometimes you guys have grown accustomed to how I oftentimes preach through Scripture, which is very broken down at times. We really kind of hone in on two or three verses. And sometimes when you do, I still believe that that is a good approach to Scripture, to slow down a little bit, analyze it a little bit. But with that being said, sometimes when you do that, the fullness of the message can potentially be lost. Does everybody track with me there a little bit? Sometimes when we break it down into so many segments, sometimes the fullness of it can be missed. And so I want to remind each of you, that's kind of one of the reasons why it's important and valuable to keep reading this, all right? Because there's a transition here, but the transition really isn't as big as you might think it is. Let me explain it this way. Jesus has been presenting this message, right? And he's, again, this message is predominantly for the 12. That are sitting around him, and he is giving them, because anyone, this is a very read scripture, even by people who are not believers, because it's a good ethics, right? In the Beatitudes, there's good ethics in there, and people can draw good ethics from the Beatitudes, but it may be a life shift, but for Christians, it's supposed to be the way we live life. And so with that being said, we jump into this next section. It's a fascinating section. I've spent a lot of time listening, trying to learn, because salt and light can mean so many different things. And in today's culture and in their culture then, there's a lot of meanings that can go into that. But I want you to see the connectiveness first, before we jump into this text, because I think it's important that you see the connection. Jesus ends the Beatitudes with this section of, this is what it looks like. If you take these things that I'm telling you, the good life belongs to these people, and you guys have heard me say this transition of recognition in the first three Beatitudes, and this transformation and realization in the second three Beatitudes, and then this practical nature in the last three, which is saying this is what it looks like at work. Now, I don't know about y'all, but when we're persecuted, that's not a word we use often anymore, but when you beat down, How about that? Is that a good, more modern day term? When you're beat down, how many of y'all just want to crawl up in a fetal position and close the door? Or is that just me? Sometimes when you're beat down, right? When life is just, it seems like around every corner, you're just getting hammered, right? And there's times you just want to curl up in a fetal position, right? That's a protective posture, right? If a mountain lion was attacking you, what would you do? Because you know you can't outrun it, right? What'd you say? Fight, yeah. I'd love to watch that fight. I'd probably pay to watch that fight. But you get in this protective posture, right? We all understand. I used the term at the beginning of this, the fetal position, right? That's the protective posture. We understand that. We understand that when life kind of beats you down, sometimes you just want to crawl up in a corner with the lights out and hide. Anybody like that? So the connection, I want you to see the transition here, because I think it can get lost if we're just chopping this thing up. At the end of the good life belongs to, the good life, I want to start there this morning and then move into this next section. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The good life belongs to those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. Okay, we already admit that if we're persecuted, if we're beat up, our natural response is to hide. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sakes, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile against you, or revile you and persecute you, and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for the reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Yeah, I mean, so right here at the end of this section of the Beatitudes, he's saying the good life belongs to those who are persecuted, but they're not just persecuted because you stand for something. They're persecuted because you stand for me, for righteousness, and it's saying rejoice in these things. And so right away, I want you to see the connection picture as we transition out of the Beatitudes into salt and light, because I think it's important for us to understand that when we are beat down, our natural tendency is to curl up into a ball and to hide from the world, right? But Jesus says, that's not what I want from you. When you're persecuted, when you're beat down, I need you to be salt and light. I don't want you to curl up into a ball. I don't want you to hide. I want you to be salt and light to a world that's beating you up, that's persecuting you. I don't want you to do what comes natural to you. I want you to do something that's fundamentally different, because that's going to show the world something totally different than what they're used to. Because when the world beats the normal man down, the normal man hides in a hole. But when the world beats one of my people down, one of the people that the good life belongs to, the response is different. The response is salt and light. The response is not curling up and hiding. It's becoming evident. And so as we move into this salt and light, I want you guys to see that the natural tendency for us as we leave this last section of the Beatitudes and enter into a new section, Jesus is calling his 12 to something different than curling up into a fetal position. He's calling them to a different life. He's calling us to a different life. So let's read this short section of Scripture this morning. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. This is a calling, right? We've just left this, the good life belongs to these people. Now he's calling people out of this place of blessedness, out of this place of the good life belongs to these people. But the good life belongs to these people for a purpose. It's to affect the world that we live in. So many times we're so selfish, aren't we, with God. We're like, how about, have you heard this phrase before? Because if you've said it before, don't raise your hand, because I'm fixing to tell you it's not a good statement, okay? But I've heard this said more than once in my life. I'm a Christian, but my faith is private. What I hear in that is not what I hear in this. Okay, what I hear in that statement is, I'm a Christian, but I just don't really want anybody to know. What I hear in this is, I'm a believer, and I choose to have a profound effect on the world that I've been living in. And so I want to look at a few things. Salt is an interesting thing, but there salt is mentioned, light is mentioned over 250 times in Scripture. Salt is mentioned a lot. I didn't count them, sorry. But it's mentioned a lot. But for some reason, he puts these two terms together. This is one of the few times in the Sermon on the Mount that he's speaking metaphorically. He's taking two terms that meant a lot in a society that didn't have the things that we have. And so we have to take a step back a little bit to appreciate what Jesus is truly saying here. If you want light at your house, what do? Turn on a light switch, right? It's pretty simple. And if the lights go out, what do? You go get a flashlight, right? Because we have electrical grids, we have battery power, we've got solar power. Light means something different than it did back then. They didn't have a lot of that stuff. And so when they're talking about light, they're talking about something that is more profound than we probably appreciate today. Because we have taken so much advantage of technology in today's society that the reality is when he's speaking of these two terms particularly, and he's going to sandwich them together, these two things meant something profound to them. Salt, let's start there. Salt, first thing I want to mention, it's a commodity then. It has extreme value. Roman soldiers of the time were often paid in salt for their wages. That's how valuable it was. That, can you imagine going to get your paycheck and you handed a quarter pound of salt? That's how they were paid. That was because it was such a high commodity. We get the phrase, are you worth your salt? Anybody heard that? Now you know where it comes from. Are you worth your salt? Are you worth your paycheck? Did you create enough value for your paycheck? And so what I want you to see first is that when he mentions salt, there is 100 directions these people's minds are going to go because of the value that they see in salt. There are things that we understand today that they understood then. Salt gives food flavor. Anybody in here besides me put salt on anything before you even try it? Drives Lana nuts, right? I'm like, where's the salt? She's like, have you even tried it? I'm like, nope, but I know it needs salt because I like salt. I like the flavor that it creates, right? It's used for preservation. Yeah, really? Some of us young people might not realize that, right? But some of the older generation understands. Before refrigeration and before they could make something that was destined to spoil soon, they could make it last longer as a result of packing meat with salt. It changes the freeze point. It changes boiling point. How many of y'all do ice cream with a crank? I believe, Reese, that you crank an ice cream machine. You're strong, right? Now we just plug it in, right? We had an ice cream thing. It was an ice cream ball that we could take camping that you just kicked around. And just the action of it would make ice cream. But salt was so used in so many practical different ways. And so what's he mean here when he talks about salt? Because it could be used and utilized, but I want you to understand when the people, first audience, hear these two terms, I want you to understand where their mind is probably going to a lot of different things. Because there's so much value in both salt and light. And there's just three things that I want to mention this morning. I will say this, that in my studies on this, This could probably be a month sermon, so I'm going to spare y'all that. Both of these, during the first audience, both of these are needed to sustain life. Both salt and light are needed to sustain life. And I think it's important for us to understand that. The salt of the earth, we're called. So interestingly enough, let's reread this really quickly. You are the salt of the earth. Y'all hear that? He's talking about you. He's not necessarily speaking of himself. He's speaking of you. You are the salt of the earth. Verse 14, you are the light of the world. He's telling you, he's telling us what we need to be. Why does he want us to be salt? Why does he want us to be light? And he uses two terms there, salt of the earth, light of the world. We're to have influence and impact on the world that we live in. He's saying these two things, these two items, light and salt, they have profound impact in society for all the qualities that they give. Has anybody ever lived in Alaska for a duration? In the winter months, it's dark, right? And in the winter, they have a lot of people going into depression because they don't ever have daylight because it's depressing. Daylight makes things grow. Daylight makes us feel better, doesn't it? I mean, after a week long of dreary clouds and snowstorms, and all of a sudden the sun peeks out. How does it make you feel? It could be negative 12 degrees, but if you can feel that sun, it just changes everything, doesn't it? Puts a little bit of a smile on your face. And so these two items are used and are important for us to understand. The quality that they have is the quality God's desiring us to have. Well, from a metaphor standing, and you need to keep it in metaphoric relation, salt has an effectiveness, light has an effectiveness, and an influence and an impact for sustainability in the life that we live today. What's Jesus calling us to have? Impact, influence for the world that we live in today. How are you going to do that if you're a closet Christian? How are we going to do that? How are we going to do that if your faith is private? He's calling us out of that place. The second point that I want to make this morning is both have purifying and healing qualities. Both of these have purifying and healing qualities. Interestingly enough, when Lan and I bought the property that we have now, I had the water well tested. And because that's what you're supposed to do when you buy a new property. And so I had it tested, had been waiting. They tell you how many gallons per minute it pumps. And then they sent a water sample off to be tested so I could tell what kind of water it was. And so when I got the results back, the guy called me and he goes, "Hey, do you have an RO system on your house?" And I was like, "Yeah, there is one under the sink." He goes, "Oh, good." I'm like, "Oh, what do you mean, oh, good?" He goes, "Well, your water has high levels of fluoride in it." I'm like, "Well, how high?" "Toxic high." I was like, "Oh, okay." And so, you know, we have this little, you see them in Texas a lot, right? This little spigot that's next to the regular faucet in the kitchen sink. It's this little spigot. That's the RO water. And so I was like, "Man, I kind of don't like just having this little bitty thing that has cleaned up water." So I started talking to the plumber. I'm like, "Hey, is there a way I could treat the whole house?" He's like, "Well, probably." So I sent that sample off to them. They created multiple filters. But one of the things that they said I had to have was a water softener. And so they got all of this stuff installed in my house, and Dion's like, "Hey, I set everything the way it needs to be set." And I'm like, "Okay." So as I'm trying to learn about this one filter and this water softener, I'm playing with the settings a little bit, trying to understand what they are, and I realize that Dion has set the salt at 100%. I'm like, "Wow, that's pretty excessive." to me in my mind, because when I read in the manual, it says about 20 is where the setting ought to be. And he has it set at 100. So I call him. I'm like, hey, you have this thing set at 100? He's like, that's what I was told to do. I'm like, man, I could raise some saltwater fish right now. How much salt's in my water? And he goes, let me check and make sure I didn't get it wrong. So he calls me back a few hours later. And he goes, yeah, they want you to run it at that setting for 3 days to clean everything out. To clean everything out. To purify where the water has been traveling. And then we can take it and dial it back. But what I want you to understand is both of these things have healing and purification in them. And so Jesus didn't just randomly pick two terms to say, this is what I want my people to look like. If you're going to buy into who I am, if you're going to live the life that I've called you to live, I need you not to just live it for yourself. I need you to understand that this life is going to have a healing property to the people you are around. Who likes being around angry people? Hunter told you this morning when he was young, he was angry. So I didn't hang out with Hunter. Most of my passwords at the office are his brother's name, not his. Because I didn't like him when I made those passwords. See, I get the last laugh this morning. What I want you guys to see is when Jesus is calling, he's calling his disciples to a different kind of life. People are attracted to people who are enjoyable to be around. Are they not? How best to be enjoyable than to affect the world that you live in like this. This is attractive. Even if people don't like it, it's still attractive. And so he calls us to this different way of living using two metaphors that meant so much during that period of time in life because they understood these. Both have penetrating properties. So the three things that I want you to hear is both are needed to sustain life. They have purifying and healing properties. And they also have penetrating properties. So let's talk about the world for a second. Does anybody think the world's a little stinky and rotten right now? What's our job? What's our job? Is it to point out how stinky it is? Is it to point out how rotten it is? Oh, maybe it's to point out how dark it is. No, it's to have an effect on it. I think for too many generations, we've not taken a message as simple as salt and light and been intentional with that message. Jesus is calling his 12, and he's saying, listen, blessed are you people. Blessed are you who've gone through this. But now that you come to this place of understanding that the good life belongs to you, I need you not to curl up into the fetal position. I need you to affect the world. I don't need you to just affect yourself. I need you to not just affect your family. I need you to affect the world. How do we do that? We do that by being different. We do that by being salt, by being penetrating, by being purifying. We do that by being light, by allowing not the darkness to control the world that we live in, but the light of Jesus Christ to have an influence and impact. And he's saying, listen, they need to see your good works. That's hard for us to hear, isn't it? But they don't need to see your good works so you can do this. They need to see your good works so they can understand who you represent. Because in the things that you do, it shines a good light on the Father. The reason for the salt, the reason for the light, is because of the blessing that I have from Him. It's not just enough to be light. It's not just enough to be salt. But it's doing those intentionally to affect the communities that we live in. Jesus is challenging his 12, saying, listen, I'm fixing to, they don't know this at the time, but he's fixing to be crucified on a cross. And he needs them to affect the world. He needs us to affect the world. He doesn't need us to affect it inappropriately. He needs us to affect it exactly how he's listed here through these metaphors. so that we can see the value of preservation, the value of stopping the rot, the value of purification, the value of light. And he's challenging each of us to do those things. So we can jump into Isaiah and see the metaphors and the instruction. And I think there's value in that. I haven't completely wrapped my mind around it, but light is something that I think goes past even what we're... light is talking also and additionally in this text about instruction. Has anybody ever heard the term enlightened? Yeah, enlightened. That's a term we garner, that instruction and given instruction in the light. Or having an idea. How would you draw that? If you're playing Pictionary and you say, I have an idea or a thought. Light bulb. Absolutely. So there's a lot more here than I'm unpacking this morning. But I think on the surface level, I think if we understand the value and importance to these two metaphors that Jesus is using, and he's not just telling the 12, now he's telling us, I need you to be effective in the world. I need you to have an effect on the world. Much like two things that were highly valued in their society, light and salt. Those two things were highly influential in the society that they lived in. They needed both. And as a result of that, he's saying, listen, I need you to be highly influential. I need you to have impact in the world you live in. As much impact as these two things had in their society. That's the kind of impact I desire for my children to have in the world that they live in. Don't take a back seat. Don't crawl up in a fetal position. When the world beats you down, be salt and light. When the world wants to push you down, don't hide in a corner. Don't turn off all the lights and crawl into the closet, because that's what we want to do at times. Jesus is calling his 12 not to do that. He's calling each of us not to do that. He's calling us to be influential and have impact in the world that we live in. So if you're going to be salt for the earth, light for the world, we need to have that kind of impact in the world that we live in today. Let that be a message this morning from the Sermon on the Mount to each of us. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, one thing I will say. If you've lost your saltiness, I've been wrestling with this in my mind. If salt loses its saltiness, it's just no longer salt. Maybe it never was. Maybe it's just dirt. Salt doesn't lose its saltiness. Salt doesn't lose its ability to preserve. Salt doesn't lose its ability to affect boiling and cooling. Salt doesn't lose any of that. It is an attribute of salt. So if you don't feel that salt, maybe you don't have salt. Maybe you've got a pocket full of dirt and you're pretending it's salt. Friday we had Brooks with Lana and I. We went out to the airport and he had a little shovel about the size of a toothpick. And he was outside playing in the dirt with that little shovel. After he'd been playing out there for 10 or 15 minutes, we were kind of gathering up and he took that shovel and stuck it right in his mouth. We were like, ooh, but I bet it didn't taste salty. That tasted just like dirt. If you have lost your salt, if you've lost your light, maybe you've not had it, or maybe you've replaced it with something inferior. But salt doesn't lose its saltiness. Light doesn't lose its ability to be light. Those things are always constant. And he's calling us into this place of consistency and constant. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, I'd ask that you come as we're led in an invitation song.